back on 88.1. It's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. Glad you're with us. So now, as we kick off a new year of Maryland Morning, I'd like to revisit one of my favorite conversations from last year when I spoke to the acclaimed actor and writer Anna Deavere Smith. In addition to her work in television on shows like The West Wing, Madam Secretary, and Nurse Jackie, she has made 18 documentary dramas in which she plays a myriad of characters through whom we are guided with trenchant insight around the complexities of different social issues. She's taken on subjects like the 1992 riots in Los Angeles, integration, and the U.S. healthcare system. In mid-December, Ms. Smith gave two stunning performances at Center Stage of her latest play called Notes from the Field, Doing Time in Education. It is a masterpiece of storytelling and a provocative call to action to end what is often called the school-to-prison pipeline. I spoke with Anna Deavere Smith the day after her second performance on December 7th. Welcome to the program.
Great to see you.
It was terrific to be in the audience. A real honor to be in the audience on Sunday and see this work. It's just incredible. For folks who aren't familiar with your process and with your work and how you put these together, tell them how you approach it and how you execute it.
Well, I interview people. Lots of different kinds of people about an issue, usually a controversial issue or something like this, catastrophe, you know, what's happening to our young people and how so many of them don't make it through school and end up in the criminal justice system. And then after I've acquired all of these interviews, I pick certain parts of the interviews and I play a lot of the parts in the course of an evening. I'm not sure how many in this play. Maybe it's around 18 people.
I counted 18.
It's 18 people. Yeah. And Baltimore has just been a very important part of the project.
Yeah, you are of Baltimore.
I'm from
and
here.
And you are also of teaching.
Yes, I've been teaching for 40 years.
Yeah.
But more importantly than that, because I teach artists in very elite institutions for a long time. I currently am a professor at NYU. I taught at Stanford for 10 years and so forth. But my mother was a public school teacher here. Her friends were all public school teachers. All my aunts were public school teachers in this city. And it was really palpable to me that teachers were able to change lives.
Yeah. But, of course, you approach this not just from the education perspective. There's actually, in a way, not a whole lot about education in particular in this work. This is you talk about the holistic experience of these young people who are growing up in poverty, who are growing up with so many cards in the deck stacked against them.
Well, right. As one of the characters who's Judge Anders from Philadelphia says, he doesn't really see it as over-policing of the schools. He sees it more as a pathway in the drug industry, because kids don't have very much money. By 14, they're out there selling drugs. So, the deeper I looked into this, and, you know, I've talked to everything from judges to the kids themselves to a famous neuroendocrinologist, you know. So you could talk about trauma. You could talk about health. You can talk about the criminal justice system. You can talk about drugs. You can talk about guns. There's a whole lot you can talk about here. And in fact, the deeper I get into it, the more concerned I get actually by calling it the school-to-prison pipeline, because I think it blames teachers and schools for something which is it's a much bigger problem, as you say. Poverty has really got a hold on our country, I think, in ways that it I don't know that it's had before.
Yeah. I guess in the program note, you mentioned that you spoke to about 50 people locally,
mm-hmm.
As well as, you know, another 100 or so from other parts of the country. How did you make the choices about who to include in the finished work
I did a lot of research in Northern California, up on an Indian reservation, the Yurok tribe, in Stockton, which is a bankrupt city, big homicide-ridden city, Philly. I'll be going to South Carolina in January to finish up the work. Well, with all of my work, my grandfather, who was a Baltimore businessman, had a shop for many years on Pennsylvania Avenue, Smith's Teas and Coffees, had an eighth grade education, which I hear actually for a black man in his time was, you know, started a business with a basket of tea. And put all his kids through college. You know, he said to me when we were little, he said, if you say a word often enough, it becomes you. If you say a word often enough, it becomes you. And that has become what I've been doing. I mean, you know, I'm on TV, thank God, sometimes. But really, how I spent my life is going around America, you know, trying to become America word for word by repeating the words of Americans. And in many ways, you could say it's to, you know, get rid of the crisis in my own life, which was growing up in a de facto segregated town and not really feeling, being told I wasn't
here,
really
Baltimore,
yeah. Maryland, being told somehow I wasn't really a true American, only to find out when Skip Gates did my roots on his show, Finding Your Roots, that, you know, one of my great uncles buried all the dead in Gettysburg. We were free since this 18th century, all these things. But there is a way that you are made to feel you don't belong. And I think that belongingness, that was one thing then, but I think it's something different now that's even worse.
And your road into these characters is their language.
Their language. What they say.
Even when they stutter, when they...
I think of it as utterances. You know, Grandpa, said if you say a word often enough, but I would say it's if you say an utterance often enough. So it's every sound that comes out of their mouth.
Yeah. And what do you think we get from hearing you do these voices as opposed to, you know, you could have done a video montage of all of these different people speaking, saying exactly the same thing you were saying, because these are verbatim transcripts of your interviews with these people from all over the map. What do we understand because we're hearing you imitate them or act them, portray them?
I'm not sure. And you, as a person who knows music, I hope your audience knows that you know music. You know, that would be kind of like saying, well, so why have Renee Fleming sing something and have Jesse Norman sing something? I mean, why and Tom Waits sing the same song? You know, why not just listen to the same thing that was recorded in 1910?
Mm-hmm.
To me, it's
exactly
kind of like that you expect the singer to bring a new illumination to that thing and bring it alive, by the way, very significantly in the present. So even though there are films of my work,
live,
I think it's different live to bring it alive to you, present, I think is something about that.
The actor and writer Anna Deavere Smith, her latest project is called Notes from the Field, Doing Time in Education on 88.1. It's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. Some of these characters are just, all of them are so powerful in their own way. There's one in particular, Judge Anders, whom you just alluded to, who showed you a picture of a little kid, like a 8-year-old kid, and then a picture of that same kid as he had grown up to be a 20-year-old man. Tell us about that experience.
I got to say that if people would leave the theater last night and feel discouraged, you shouldn't, because I am meeting extraordinary people from all different walks of life. And Judge Anders, when we came to that meeting, had gone through his files to find this to show us of a young man who just grew up in the system. And what the judge's point is just imagine how many judges this young man saw from the age of 4 or 5 to the age of 20. His mother was a drug addict, so he grew up. How many judges would he have been in front of, even when he wasn't doing anything wrong, right? And that nobody stopped it. Nobody intervened. And he talks about how judges play a very important role, not only in protecting the public, but treating people with the dignity they deserve. And so when you think of it, there's so many ways. And he says that when he sentenced this guy, he said, "We failed you. The system failed you. We did not provide you with an education, a safe environment, many of the things that we are supposed to do." So we think of all the ways, which is why we should be careful about blaming schools, all the ways these kids just fall through the system, whether it's because they get at 19 years old, as one character says, they're at a 1.7 reading level, that no teacher in no school, no environment in all of those years was able to teach them how to read. Or, I mean, then I suppose if we get to health matters, it would be the same. So
sure.
That's the judge is really telling us that there are many opportunities to stop that pipeline, and many of us are not doing our simple part to do it.
Back in June, as part of this process, you were here in Baltimore and you were conducting these interviews and you were talking to folks, and you did a public presentation with our mutual friend Taylor Branch.
And also another one with Sherrilyn Ifill.
Right, who was part of this production, as a matter of fact. Taylor Branch, of course, Pulitzer Prize-winning historian. You talked to Taylor about the paucity of empathy. And it seems to me, as I left the theater, it was pretty depressing. But the key to this is empathy between communities who don't often know each other, white communities who don't understand what it's like to grow up in Sandtown, Winchester, or Oliver, or Rosemont, who don't have no notion of what it's like to walk to school past boarded up houses and people slinging dope on the street, etc. How do we create empathy from enough people outside of these communities to have the political will to make the investment in those
communities? Part of it is a logistical problem and part of it is a spiritual problem, right? The logistical problem is that we have very few places where we can convene. And it's really easy for us to live in what I call safe houses of identity, right? Like I could, if I wanted to, as an artist, I could be concerned only with matters of African-American women. Let's say. Mm-hmm. That's what I could do. That's not what I did. I decided to go where I didn't belong and chase that which was not me. And I'm constantly trying to invite my students to think about coming out of this safe house of identity, which they're getting more and more particular now, if you notice. You know, and people say it's because of, you know, all these different news stations, but it's also because people really want to be in their affinity group. We have to find those people, and I think that's what leadership is, who are willing to walk back and forth between communities and take people with them to say, I need you to see this. I need you to do this over there. And by the way, it needs to go both ways. So if the rich go towards the poor also should be invited to go towards the rich. We cannot afford to stay in our little places, whether it's out of a feeling of self-righteousness or whether it's out of racism, you know, and that prevails always.
You took us on quite a ride in all sorts of places on Sunday, and I look forward to seeing this, how this work continues to develop. It was an honor to be there and an honor to meet you. Thank you so much for your time.
It's my honor to be here.
The actor and writer Anna DeVere Smith. Her latest one-person play is called Notes from the Field, Doing Time in Education. We spoke last month after she gave two performances of her new play at Baltimore's Center Stage. Come to the Maryland Morning website and we'll have links to conversations on Twitter and Facebook about the Anna DeVere Smith Pipeline Project and some suggestions as to how you can get involved with schools and advocacy groups that are working on issues related to education, incarceration, and job training. The address is wipr.org/Maryland Morning. Also, there's an ongoing and very cool new project that continues online from the creative team at Baltimore's Center Stage. It's called My America 2, and it's centered on the question, what is the new civil rights movement? Kwamikwe Arma, the director of Center Stage, produced 6 videos at 6 of the sites in which young black men were killed, places like Sanford, Florida, Cleveland, Ohio, Staten Island, New York, and, of course, here in Baltimore. You can screen them online. Come to wipr.org/Maryland Morning for the link. I'm Tom Hall. Lots more ahead on the program. Stay with us. What's going on?